week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
Hey, I'm Noor Azriyeh, and today I'm gunning for Jesse Brown's job and talking about the news. We'll talk mass deportations in Canada and why we're going to be seeing a lot more of them. We'll talk about the Human Rights Watch report that alleges Israel killed and targeted three Lebanese journalists just last month. But mostly, we'll be talking about the Canada Post strike, and we'll try to get to the bottom of the big question, the major question, the single most important question.
How will we get any letters to the North Pole?
Wait for that. Welcome back to the show, Canada Land reporter Cherise Sutrin.
Thanks for having me, Noor.
Ottawa is where we begin this hour with news that mediated talks between Canada Post and the union representing its workers have been suspended. That decision came from the federal mediator who's been trying to resolve the strike.
And it does not appear that the federal government will step in to resolve the dispute.
No end in sight for the 55,000 Canada Post workers who walked off the job November 15th.
Demanding better wages, benefits, and pensions.
Right now, we're 2 weeks into the strike. You feeling it?
I can't say that I haven't. I've got a ton of mail.
Me neither. Who uses mail? Apparently a lot of people, because this has been all over the news. But the last two postal strikes in 2011 and 2018 ended through back-to-work legislation. And even though we're in a crucial time of the year for a mail service, it seems like things are gridlocked. When the strike started, we saw a lot of coverage about how Canada Post is losing money, what the strike would mean for small businesses, and how it would affect Black Friday shopping this season. Look, I know there's a lot of big labor issues at stake here in this strike, this Canada Post strike, but recently, I'm reading a really important story, Cherise. It really took me aback when I read it. I'm reading about how this strike will affect letters from Santa. This first came to my attention in the Toronto Star. Here's the headline. Canada Post says strike affecting Santa letters, but will make North Pole deliveries once operations resume. The union said that they are just as disappointed Santa can't get his letters at the moment, but that postal workers are doing their best to make sure that Santa gets everyone's letters. And then they go to say that we know Santa supports the collective bargaining rights of his workers. What's interesting is that in some regions, local unions in BC, Winnipeg, areas of Montreal are deciding to still collect Santa letters themselves.
What about the Canada Post strike? How will we get any letters to the North Pole?
Canada Post says that, unfortunately, because of the labor disruption, it is unable at this time to make those crucial deliveries to the North Pole.
Instead of heading to the mailbox on the street, we'll actually be taking this letter straight to the Canada Post workers who deliver the mail.
Santa letters that we're collecting as a union by ourselves, we're going to volunteer to do that, and we'll make sure that those letters get to Santa.
Cherise, it feels, I don't know, a little bit weird that some of the unions are still doing it, but not others. It feels like it's being done in this like piecemeal manner. What the hell happened to solidarity? And if you're gonna do it, why not make like a good big PR move?
Yeah, like I can't help but think, are they scabbing for Santa?
I have no idea. I wonder, do you think Santa's elves are unionized?
Oh my God, no. They're short-term employees, maybe temporary workers. Oh, they're probably gig workers, actually. Do you think there's like an app where Santa will hire elves?
They're
like
gig
kind
workers.
Of like Uber
yeah.
Or DoorDash? But for real, I mean, like, I think it's cute, of course, that these Canada Post employees want to collect the letters for Santa, for the kids. But I think a real question is, like, is this scabbing? Like, is this going against the Canada Post strike and the point that the strike is trying to make? I don't know. I mean, I haven't talked to any postal employees about how they feel about this, but it is a question that I have. I mean, there's good intentions that maybe have an unfortunate result.
Look, I just find it, honestly, a bit ridiculous that we are talking about Santa, who I might add is a fictional character, when we've got, like, people's jobs at stake, and especially around the holiday season, and we've got an essential service that is now, like, ground to a halt.
But not only has the mail ground to a halt, negotiations have now fully broken off, with the federal mediator calling off the talks on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we have reports that Canada Post has actually been laying off some of the striking workers. In the Toronto Star, they talked to Canada Post spokeswoman Lisa Liu, who said that the layoffs are temporary and that Canada Post informed some employees that the collective agreements are no longer in effect, and she was referring to part of the Canada Labour Code that covers lockout notices. Liu said, quote, "Our business has been significantly impacted leading up to and throughout this labour disruption. We have taken steps to adjust our operations," end quote. So this is a really unusual move by Canada Post, since the Labour Code also protects against laying off striking workers, and the Star reports this could open up Canada Post to legal action by the union unless they can prove they had reasons other than the strike for laying off the workers. The union has responded, saying this is a scare tactic by the corporation. But it's clear that we're in the midst of a really bitter dispute, and there are a bunch of evolving labor narratives, which makes the previous news coverage of the strike seem like they're missing a lot of the story.
But Santa's letters aren't the only absurd part of this coverage on the Canada Post strike. The Canadian press brought us another story about the real victim of the Canada Post strike, Percy.
Percy?
I'll read you a bit of this article. "Christmas cards are a cherished annual tradition for Percy. He sends dozens of them every year. More than 70 last Christmas, each with a personalized message. Percy is a 9-year-old golden doodle with 33,000 followers on Instagram. And it is really just hilarious to me that we're centering a dog's story about his 33,000 followers on Instagram when workers are on strike.
Can we just pause for a second?
Yeah.
I need to look up the dog Percy to see what he looked like.
Yeah, because, no, let's... Percy?
I mean, Percy is pretty cute, and if he sent me a Christmas card, I'd probably love it. but is this really the most important thing here?
Is this the news story
we
need?
Especially since it only seems like dozens of people get cards. Not that many.
More than 70.
More than 70.
Here's another one from the Canadian press. "Postal service is a lifeline. Seniors feel isolated due to Canada Post strike." This one has an interview with Diane Parker, who's 78, from Halifax, who says that the strike is eroding joy for many seniors in Canada. "The Postal Service is a lifeline to the aging population. They don't have WhatsApp. They don't have email. Their only avenue of keeping in touch is through mail in Canada Post."
Huh.
Huh.
That's...
Huh.
Are they saying that there are actual seniors that only communicate through mail?
Yes, and that Diane Parker said that folks in her community saw a senior crying at a cafe over the strike. Look, I'm not one to laugh at seniors, but, like, maybe it's time to get an iPhone.
Look, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are some seniors that are very old school, that have never been on the digital side of things, that only use letters, but I'm struggling to think of any that I know. Most seniors I know, they're not living in 1840. they have phones.
Yeah, surprise.
Seniors use phones. They were alive when phones were invented. Even if you're not digital, you probably have a landline.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I've just been struggling to make sense of why this has been the focus of so much of the coverage on this strike, like how it's affecting businesses and how it's affecting Percy the doodle, how it's affecting Santa in the North Pole. I feel like I haven't really heard anything from why this matters to the workers.
Yeah, and that's what I really wanted to talk about, because I think it's really interesting the way the media has been framing this. But when we talk about strikes, it's often always focused on all the bad things that happen to the public when people are on strike, and very rarely looking at, like, well, why are they striking in the first place? So there was one really good article that gets to the heart of this issue. And this is from the Globe and Mail, published on November 12th. by Van Malis Subramaniam, and she's the Globe's Future of Work reporter. And so it's got a quote from the president of the union saying, Canada Post wants to gigify the post office. They want to contract out our work and create a two-tier workplace where some workers have much harder jobs than others. So the union is seeking the end of what they call a separate sort from delivery system, SSD, which means that there are two different roles for postal workers. Some are doing delivery jobs and some are doing sorting. Before, Canada Post letter carriers used to also do the sorting. So that means that they would spend part of their day inside and part of their day outside. And the union wants to get back to that because to have one sector of the labor force get this sort of cozy, comfy inside job and then another section of the labor force have the hard outside job walking and driving all day in the cold. So the union is actually pushing back on this system because they're saying that this is actually impacting people's health, the people that have to do the actual carrying.
And according to the Globe, this is a system that Amazon and Walmart are using to increase efficiency. So it seems like Canada Post might have implemented it in order to be competitive because the company has been losing customers. During the last week of October, Canada Post parcel volumes were down 28% compared to that same week in 2023. But this is actually another thing the union is pushing back on. They said Canada Post lost its advantage when door-to-door service started to be cut back starting in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And another point of tension that's going under the radar, and this is an article published on November 19th, and it's talking about how in September, Canada Post proposed this new class of employees that would work flexible part-time hours on weekdays and weekends. And this has been a point of tension in negotiations. The union is against it. They call it creating a two-tier workforce. And I think this is what they mean when they talk about gigifying or increasing the amount of temp workers in their workforce.
I know there's like another aspect of this strike that has been going under the radar. So this is again from the Globe and Mail from Van Malis Subramaniam. This was published on November 19th. So what they're saying is in September, Canada Post proposed this new class of employees that would work flexible part-time hours on weekdays and weekends. So this has actually been a point of tension in negotiations, what they call part-time flex and weekend part-time flex workers would essentially become permanent part-time positions. And the union is super against this, what they call a two-tier workforce in which some employees have better working conditions and they're unhappy overall with this sort of growing temp and part-time work issue. But essentially, this is why negotiations have stalled at the bargaining table. This actually gets into some interesting labor issues around the pressures of Amazon and other delivery methods that have ramped up in the past few years that isn't getting play in the media.
It's crazy that this is like the first time I'm hearing this after like reading a bunch of articles about this Canada Post strike. So
this is a fascinating labor problem that we're seeing right now, you know, not just with Canada Post, but we're looking at like any delivery worker, Uber, DoorDash. It seems like since everything has moved online, the number of people working in the sort of gig-based economy is growing and it's becoming such a pertinent issue today. What I want to get to is the idea that this story is largely, aside from this Globe and Mail story, you're not really seeing this in the news. Like you said, this is the first time you're hearing about it. My theory is that this is partially because of journalists not being super familiar with how to cover labor. But it's also, I think, the unions.
Ooh, tell me about that.
Yeah, and as the Canada Union president, this is kind of hard to say because I don't want to on the unions. I support unions in general. But I think the comm strategy of a lot of unions is not great.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reporting on labor when I was working in Vancouver as a reporter and then also in Toronto. And whenever there was a strike or some sort of labor action was happening and you would try to actually understand, you know, why is the strike happening? And you would, you know, call up the union comms or you would go on the website and check their press releases. And it was always hard to parse exactly what was going on from the union line. And I even right now, I'm looking on the Canada Post website trying to find some mention of the pressures from Amazon or this even the SSD system. And I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing it at all. And then you go to all the news coverage and you look at the quotes from the union organizers and the leaders. You're not seeing it there either. A lot of the framing around this has been they talk about wage, they talk about benefits, but it's this very generic language that doesn't point to any specific or, frankly, interesting issues. And I think the responsibility of a communications person is to ultimately make an issue interesting.
And to communicate.
Exactly. <Well. laughs> And so the communications efforts from these unions needs a bit of work. And I say that as a reporter and also a reader of news, because it shouldn't be that hard to figure out what's going on.
Agreed. But we started with the Santa letters. I want to end on the Santa letters. Honestly, if I can confess something, I have never heard of these Santa letters. We don't have Santa letters in Lebanon or in Qatar. Charisse, I've never gotten one. I've never written one. Did you send letters to Santa?
Well, the thing about Canada, Nora, I know you didn't grow up here, but I did. And the thing about Canada is that Santa is nicer to Canadian children than he is to any other children.
Clearly.
Clearly. Because what Santa does is when you write to him, he writes you back.
Do you remember your first Santa letter?
Oh, my God. I don't. But I do remember sitting at my kitchen table with crayons and paper and writing these letters. And then my parents would, like, put them in envelopes and put them in the mail.
What the heck?
Then in a couple weeks, you get a letter back from Santa saying that he'd gotten it. But for real, this is a program actually that the Canada Post has been doing for over 40 years. Kids write letters addressed to Santa at the North Pole, H-O-H-O-H-O. And you don't need a stamp. You just put it in the mail. And then they have a system that sends something back to children. It's actually pretty special and pretty cool.
Yeah, sure.
It really underscores the magic of Christmas. But as we know, the magic of Christmas is actually Canada Post employees.
Write to Santa Claus, North Pole, H-O-H-O-H-O, Canada. Include your return address and Santa will write back.
Charisse, give me a story that you want people to hear about. You know how this works. What do you have to duly note for me?
Right. So this story comes in actually a larger context of what's going on with immigration these days. And I want to duly note a story from the Toronto Star. And it's entitled, 1.2 million temporary residents must leave Canada in 2025 when their status expires. But will they? This is by Nicholas King. From November 21st. This story is essentially about the new government immigration plan, which was supposed to slow the growth of immigration to Canada to sort of address the housing and affordability crisis. And the federal government is trying to reduce the quota of permanent residents down about 100,000 people and also reduce the temporary resident population. But what this story actually is looking at is what that means for actual permanent residents and temporary residents in Canada.
Hey, you're looking at one.
Oh, hi, Noor. Nice to meet you. This story has so much to do with you. But what that means is that a lot of people who have made their lives in Canada, who are working and living in Canada and sometimes paying taxes in Canada, might have to leave. They might not make the cut. The story also points to an issue that I think is not getting a lot of press coverage. It is also very serious, which is the issue of deportations.
I was hoping you were going to mention that.
Yes. So the story says since January 2023, the Canada's Border Service Agency has increased their number of what they call inland enforcement officers. So those are essentially people that take you and deport you.
So Canada's ICE.
Kind of, yes. By 15%. And the story is saying that removals, which often means deportations, of inadmissible foreign nationals are likely to rise by 60% this year compared to 2022. I have covered immigration and migration for a long time, so I have a lot of sources in that field. And I'm seeing anecdotally that deportations have been increasing. I'm hearing more stories of families being deported families that have lived in Canada for a long time. I'm hearing more stories of people being refused asylum. These things appear to be increasing, and it definitely is a cause for concern. I think Canada really needs to take a moment and try to figure out who we want to be in the world. Mm-hmm. We used to be this sort of safe haven country that people can come and make their lives. I mean, my parents came to this country 30, 40 years ago to make their lives here. They used a immigration system that was quite open at the time. Nowadays, I don't think people like my parents would actually get in. I don't think they would qualify under the new rules. And that means that people like me wouldn't be able to be here either. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's really time for us all to really take a step back and figure out what kind of a country we want to be in the world.
Yeah, duly noted.
Nor, what do you have for me?
I want to duly note a piece in the Globe and Mail. It was initially reported in the Associated Press this week. It's titled, "Israeli airstrike that killed three Lebanese journalists was most likely deliberate," a watchdog says. Quote, "The October 25th airstrike this year killed three journalists in Lebanon as they slept at a guest house in the southern east part of Lebanon. It was one of the deadliest attacks on the media in Lebanon since the start of the war between Israel and Hezbollah about 13 months ago. In a recent report from the Human Rights Watch, they found that there was no evidence of fighting, military forces, or military activity in the immediate area at the time of the attack. And they noted, Human Rights Watch, that the Israeli military knew or should have known that journalists were staying in the building. The report also determined that the Israeli forces carried out the attack using an airdropped bomb equipped with U.S.-produced ammunition. The Guardian reported on the attacks as well. I'll read you a quote from their article. Quote, "The strikes hit a group of small chalets that 18 journalists from at least seven different media outlets, including Al Jazeera, Sky News Arabia, and TRT, were staying in while covering the Israel-Hezbollah war in South Lebanon. There were several cars there with press signs on them parked in front of the site." Look, it's been a year, over a year. And as of November 25th, according to the CPJ, the Committee to Protect Journalists, 137 journalists and media workers have been killed since the start of this war. 129 Palestinian, 2 Israeli, and 6 Lebanese. The IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, have not yet commented on this specific Human Rights Watch report about the alleged targeted killing of Lebanese journalists, but the IDF have repeatedly told media outlets that the army does not deliberately target journalists. It also told agencies shortly after that the war started that it could not guarantee the safety of journalists. The CPJ continues to call for the end of what they say is a long-standing pattern of impunity in cases of journalists killed by the IDF. This isn't just the CPJ. A few United Nations experts have raised concerns over the killings of journalists, saying in a statement from February that they were alarmed at the high number of journalists and media workers who have been killed, attacked, injured, and detained in the occupied Palestinian territory, including, and in most particular, in Gaza, and that it is a blatant disregard for international law. As a journalist, as a Lebanese journalist, I think it's really important for us to constantly talk about press freedom. We haven't talked about it enough in this country. And stories like this barely ever make it onto people's screens, into their media diet. And I just want to make sure that it is.
Yeah.
137 journalists is 137 too many.
I mean, this is close to my heart as well. I cannot imagine what it's like to be a journalist and go into work and not knowing if you'll make it to the end of the day. I look at those journalists working in Gaza and I wonder, like, if it was me, would I be brave enough?
I don't know if
and
I would.
I don't know if I would be. And I wish I could say I would be. Something that I also want to say is we are seeing the impacts of what this does, because there's so many questions about what is actually going on there, and the people that would be telling us what is going on there are not making it out alive.
As journalists, I think it's important to keep talking about this. I know I will. I hope I don't have to.
Yeah. Duly noted.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining me. You can email me at noor@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. Sometimes I respond. And you can also reach me on Blue Sky. Search up my name, Noor Azriye, click my pretty profile pic, and hit the follow button. You can also hit me up on there. Charisse, where can people find you?
So I am still on Twitter. I am C. Suturan, so my first initial and my last name on Twitter. And now on Blue Sky at Charisse Suturan, one word, so my full first name, last name on Blue Sky.
This episode was produced by James Nicholson. Mixing and mastering by Caleb Thompson. Our director of audio is Max Collins, who also did the fact-checking for this episode. Jesse Brown is the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.